This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DeFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 44 of the Muscles and Management Podcast. As always, please throw me a review, rating, subscribe, share, feedback, whatever it is. They all help. It all helps me make the show better and obviously get it out there. So shamelessly, as always, asking for those reviews and ratings. I want to say thank you. New milestone of 25,000 total show downloads. I try not to do these too often anymore, and I feel like every 5,000 used to be like a long enough time apart to do it, but as the show gets bigger, I feel like I'm doing this every couple shows and it's getting kind of corny. So I will space these out a little bit more. Maybe you won't hear from me till 35 or 40. So we'll let that get a little bigger. And obviously 50 will be a big one. So either way, though, I'm just saying thank you. You guys are amazing. And, you know, the growth the show has seen, I say it every time, it's just fantastic. So thank you. I also want to say thank you for 7,000 Twitter followers. Kind of hard to wrap my head around that, the growth on there. And the connections I've made and the people I've gotten to know and the reach that I've been able to have. You know, I think back to when I wanted to kind of start all this, when I was just a, you know, young, you know, business student in college and, you know, kind of wanted to get into the industry with no, you know, I had no right to be there, but I kind of wanted to do it and help people and, you know, live my passion and things like this just, you know, really blow my mind. So thank you for that. 7,000 is amazing. And if you follow, support me in any way, thank you. I want to kind of to hit on the last few episodes. They've been great. You know, we had episode, hold on, I'm looking at the numbers here. We had episode 40, Building Harmony Between Strength and Speed, with Kevin Poppy. He's just great. And, you know, we talk a lot now and, you know, the thought process he has on a lot of things and the level of guys that he works with. And I know you shouldn't always define the quality of a trainer based on who they work with, but I am telling you that I know he's a good trainer. So the guys that he work with just speaks to that and his ability to get guys faster, stronger and whatever it is. And, you know, his thought process on a lot of things is just fantastic. So definitely check that out. In the same vein, I can say the same for the episode with Zach Dakin from TCU and the episode with Alan Bishop from Houston men's basketball. Just two brilliant guys, just like Kevin, that just really, you know their stuff and have a very simple way of approaching training and programming. And, you know, as complicated as some of it is, they just make it really simple to understand. So if you're an up-and-coming coach in the industry who's looking to learn from some guys that just really know how to get it done, or even an athlete just kind of, you know, looking to hear some ways to get better with your own training, check those out for sure. Last week's episode with Joe Arattari, first episode that I've done with the whole format of breaking down tweets. We kind of went back and forth with each other, and he read some of mine to me, and I expanded on them, and vice versa. Joe is just great, just a young strength coach, very similar to myself, that, you know, passionate and not afraid to share their thoughts on things. And it made for a really interesting episode where we broke down some of our most famous tweets. So check that out for sure. It also, you know, got a lot of good feedback on the format with the reading of the tweet. So it's something I'm going to be doing more often, wink, wink, this episode. Looking into some upcoming episodes, we have Pitching Ninja and Dallas Braden coming on very soon after the postseason is over. You know, just can't even believe that. That's going to be an incredible combination. A major league veteran, a guy through a perfect game in the bigs, and then you got Rob, Pitching Ninja, what he's done for the game and what he's done to grow the game and the connections he's made and the strides he's made for social media and baseball. To have those two guys on together is going to just be awesome. So pumped for that. Look for that sometime in November. And then Bob Alejo, Bob, former, you know, strength and conditioning with the Oakland Athletics, UCLA, just is a veteran of the industry who knows his stuff and, you know, we just had an hour conversation yesterday, and when it ended, I asked him if he would, you know, love to come on the show, and I would love to have him, obviously, and, you know, he was willing to, so really excited to have him on. If it's anything like the conversation we had on sprint mechanics and power yesterday, then it's going to be a great one. So look forward to that in November. quick second, just want to talk about what I just announced, the Challenger Strength membership, Challenge Your Strength membership program that I'm doing, that'll be coming out at the new year, so January 2020, membership-based program, complete with an exercise database, weekly programs, instructional videos, more comprehensive videos that go beyond, the exercise examples and snippets posted for free on Twitter and social media. Really excited about that. More information is going to come on the cost, what it involves, and all that kind of stuff. So just be on the lookout for that, whether it's on here or on Twitter. So without further ado, kind of getting all that housekeeping stuff out of the way, a quick background on this episode's guest, Blaine Kinsley. Blaine is the current director of baseball strength conditioning at the University of Arkansas, and he's been there since 2017. So couple years there, and he's done a fantastic job. If you don't follow Blaine on Twitter, definitely check him out. Education-wise, he graduated from Lenoir Rhyne University in 2010 with a bachelor's in sports management and a minor in exercise science. He's also in the University of Arkansas Master's of Physical Education program to be completed in sometime in 2020, so very soon. Just a very, very smart guy. If you don't follow him, you should. And if you do, you know the quality of work that he's doing over at Arkansas, a very high-level program. So, a guy that I'm very pleased to have on. And in terms of some of his, previous jobs and positions and, some of his experience, he was a St. Louis Cardinals strength conditioning coach 2016 to 2017, assistant strength conditioning at East Carolina University, Chicago Cubs head strength conditioning for the Peoria Chiefs in 2011, and he started out at Hendrick Motorsports as a strength and conditioning coach in 2010. So he has a wealth of experience across a bunch of different areas and a bunch of different positions he's held over the last 10 or so years. And, I'm just really excited to have him on. I think you guys are going to learn a lot from what he has to say and what we have to talk about. As I mentioned, we are moving a little bit into that tweet format. So I went through his page and I found some of his, the tweets that I liked of his the most over various topics. We're talking Olympic lifting, different variations that he uses, why he uses them, caring less about variations, more about the adaptations you're looking to get, not getting caught up in all that. Single leg RDLs versus staggered RDLs, keeping it simple in strength training and, how you should know what you're looking to achieve in sport. I'm sorry, in training to, mirror sport or to move closer to your sport. How to recruit the most motor units and what variations do that and all types of things like that. So you guys are going to love this one. He was great. And, I'm excited to hear the feedback on this. So enjoy the episode, guys. As always, thank you for listening. Till next time. Peace. All right, everyone. I'd like to welcome on Blaine Kinsley. Blaine, thanks so much for coming on, man. I appreciate your time.
No problem, man. I appreciate you having me on.
For sure. So as I, kind of said, I want to stick a little bit with this, show format where I've had a lot of feedback last week on, reading the tweets and expanding on them. And I went through your page and there was some stuff that I liked right away that I thought would, make for some great talking points. And, one of the first things that I wanted to touch on, if those who are listeners remember, a couple weeks ago, there was sort of a, little, I would call it a riff, so to speak, where people were kind of arguing about cleans, whether they use them or don't use them. And a lot of, what people were saying was whether they're good, whether they're not good, whether they should use them or not. And I kind of have a stance of, being kind of neutral on it. And I look at it more as like it's a variation and the exercise is great. But if you use it, if you use it, if you don't, whatever. And there was a tweet that you replied to and you said, same coach to this. You said same, like that you do the same thing. And this is from Devin McConnell. And the tweet reads, things I find myself doing less of lately: Olympic lifts, bench press, vertical pulls, and then things he finds himself doing more of: horizontally loaded jumps, landmine and full body pressing, and then horizontal pulls. So I guess to just open it up right away and talk about the Olympic lifts, and we'll get to the other parts of it. But for you, what is your experience with the Olympic lifts? And I know you use them, but in terms of when you don't or when you do, like what kind of goes into that?
Yeah, so people that know me, I love the bench, I love the squat, I love Olympic stuff, so... I think over the years, as guys come in, the training age is very low. We have JUCO guys come in. We have freshmen that come in. They have no experience in training at all. Some of my past stops, we had kids that came in, they power cleaned before. you know, it's just a different kind of kid. And what's interesting about, you know, where we're at now at University of Arkansas is most of our pitchers are pretty good. They're pretty good cleaners. You know, we got a Friday night guy that does, you know, he cleans 305. Last week, 295 for a double. So, you know, the other two guys on the weekend, I don't catch cleans. You know, they do Olympic, they do straight trap bar jumps. You know, risk to reward, and is you don't get much time, especially in the college setting, to work with guys on a technique lift like that. So when they come in, we definitely, you know, progress them and we track that. But if they don't have a background in it and we don't see any future of them doing it, we're not going to do it. You know, we're not in the business here of saying, hey, we all Olympic lift and that's what we do. We're in the business of winning and development. You know, we know our guys don't get drafted. We're looking for to develop our guys for 10 years in the big leagues. All right. So it's not that you come in, hey, you're never going to clean. You might get to that point. You know, if you start getting movement patterns down and you're able to do it, you know, personally, I love the cleans. One, absorbing the weight. Yeah, it's baseball, but you got to dive, all that good stuff. You do hit the ground every once in a while. Two, you can't tell me a guy that cleans 315 that toes the rubber on a Friday night, the mental edge he has over people to get in the box. You know, people that have cleaned before can understand that. And also, you absorb the weight in athletic position. You're in that hinge. So, again, I mean, it's always, you know, what kind of team do you have? What kind of player do you have? What's better for the team? Obviously, you want stuff to transfer to the field. And you can do that with other exercises other than Olympic stuff. But, yeah, we do. We love the Olympic stuff here. And, I mean, some of our guys, they snatch. All right, but some of our guys don't do any Olympic stuff. So
you, from kind of what I'm getting is, and I would agree with this like 1,000% looking at, I'll say this in this setting. So some of the older guys I work with that I can compare similar situations to would be guys that come in that I've never met before. And maybe they're 18, 19, 20 years old. It's, you know, in the junior hockey world. And they've obviously trained. If the training age is low, obviously it's a different story. But some of those guys have trained for, you know, several years before they ever met me, right? So I look at a lot of them and I say, okay, like what variation do you primarily use for your lower body? Front squat, trap bar deadlift, like what are you using previously? And like you said, kind of, I really like that, how you put it. Like, you're not going to have everybody clean, and some guys, you know, may not because they've never done it before. But if a guy comes in and it's something he's comfortable with and he's done for the last 5 years of his training and is technically proficient in it and, you know, isn't going to be in a position to get hurt, like, why wouldn't you have them continue doing it?
Right. Exactly. You know, we have guys that come in like this freshman class. We had a kid that cleaned. He came in and cleaned 245, you know, so that's something that he's been efficient in for the last 4 years of his high school program because he had a great high school strength coach. And we'll carry over those, you know, those everything that he's learned is going to help. You know, that kid also he came in with a really good vert and a broad jump. Why? Because he has explosive hips.
Yeah.
So we'll probably keep doing that and make explosive hips, because if you have explosive hips, you're very successful in this game, in my eyes.
For sure. And I think, and I couldn't agree more with that, I think one of the things that aggravates me the most is the idea that it's got to be one or the other. Some people look at the clean as like, oh, you should never do it. And then the other side that says like, oh, it's the only way you're going to be able to achieve certain things. One, we know that as coaches, like, there are so many different ways in the weight room to, you know, achieve that triple extension, the hip extension through power. And there's also a lot of good ways that the clean, a lot of the, you know, those ways the clean achieves as well. So it's like, if someone looks at me in the face and says, hey, I can achieve these certain things with these means that aren't a clean, or they look at me and they say, I don't do what you do, I get those through the clean, I'm going to say, all right, if it works for you and it gets it done, like, I don't know why people get so bent out of shape about the whole thing.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not, you know, I haven't been in the business for 30 years like some people, but I've never had an elbow. I had one wrist back in the day because the guy caught it wrong. You know what? We didn't clean him again, all right, because his technique wasn't there. I mean, you just got to look at your team. What kind of culture do you have? Does the head coach like it? You know, there's a lot of situations, and I'm fortunate enough to work for the best college baseball coach in the country. And, you know, he believes in me and he trusts me, and the guys are bought in. So, hey, some of our guys clean, some of them don't.
Yep.
And that's just the way it is.
I think it's a great way to kind of sum it up, really. In terms of, you know, the other things in the tweet, the vertical pulling versus the horizontal pulling, and, you know, the bench pressing versus the overhead pressing or full body pressing, you know, any general thoughts on those things? And I know the bench press gets kind of, and especially more so lately, has been getting tossed around, and just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on all those.
Well, people that know me that are listening, they all know I love bench. I love heavy, heavy single pull-ups. But we do honor press. You know, we do jerk a little bit. We landmine variations. We do everything. Over the years, I've always been a bench, squat, power clean, variation guy twice a week. Max effort, dynamic.
Yep. All right. Conjugate. Yep. I'm conjugate too. Yeah.
And we always stick to that philosophy. We still do, but we're open-minded about development for these kids. All right. We're getting the best of the best in the country, and you have to understand that. You know, so we look at their deficiencies. We look at what they're good at. What's the best for their program? Like I said, some kids come in. The power clean's not going to – he'll never be ready for that because we need him to be at his top notch when he gets out there in front of Coach Van Horn, right, or he's in front of the scouts. Well, we can't waste our time just trying to do the clean. We could do med ball work or a vertical jump with the trap bar. We did it today with peak velocity. All right, some of our guys clean, some guys did trap bar.
Yep.
I'll get Jason Rabbit, man. You gotta just stay with me. So, not all of our guys are going to deadlift. Not all going to squat. We have different variations for each one. You know, when it comes to the bench press, I look at dumbbell bench as a more advanced upper body pressing than bench press. And the reason I say that is stabilization.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, you want to be real with it. You know, sometimes these pro teams, they get bad raps like, oh, it's just all they do is dumbbell bench. That's all the gyms they have. When these minor league coordinators program, they go to Clinton, Iowa, where there's no gym, but it might be a Planet Fitness. All right. There's no barbells in there. You know what I'm saying? So there's adjustments that you have to make. So the vertical pulling, that's an interesting thing. You know, a lot of people, they talk about kids getting lat dominant, blah, blah, blah. You know, I actually, the last couple of years, started doing more horizontal pulls because if you think about it, baseball is a lat dominant sport. You know, whether you're breathing, you're throwing everything you do. So all the stressors are in that. We just go to vertical pulling because that takes the stress off the lat. Okay. So once the guys start getting revved up in fall ball or leading into spring, we take those heavy singles out. We start doing horizontal pulls. Swiss bar inverted row is my favorite one. You can load it up as long as the hips are locked in. That's our favorite variation. You can ask our pitchers. They do them a lot. So, a lot of people get all messed up about, you know, the upper body to horizontal or to just pull, but you got to look at the shoulder, you know. So if the lat gets dominant, trap's going to be over dominant or it's going to be underused. The rotator cuff's going to be messed up. I mean, everything's going to lose what you're trying to maintain up there. So we like to take all the stress off of it and start doing, you know, horizontal pulls instead of vertical.
Yeah, and I think the key in there, and Joe DeFranco said this a couple months back, and I liked how he said it, and, you know, making sure that if there's a balance between, the pressing work that you're doing that is heavily it's set in retraction, versus the pressing you're doing where there's, you know, ability to protract the scaps. Like, if you have a balance there, and same thing with, like, you know, lat dominant pulls versus, like, more cuff work, let's say, or more upper back types. Like, if there's a balance there, like, you're going to be fine. And that's the thing to remember is you don't have to stay away from one or the other. It's just make sure that it's, like, not that what dominates your program. Like, if you dominate your program with all scap restricted pushes, like, there might be a problem.
Yeah. 100%. You know, the basic thing I tell when I talk to high school coaches or, you know, sport coaches sometimes that contact me is, you know, do 3 to 4 pulls in one press, you know, just be smart about it.
I agree.
The game, all we do is press. So your basic rule of thumb, I mean, even with our guys, we have guys that come in, their shoulders leaning forward, they have bad posture. You know, we hammer eccentric pulls.
I just pulled my shoulders back because I'm sitting here right now.
Exactly. Whoever's going to listen to this is going to straighten up in their chair.
Yeah.
And it's tough. I mean, we're in an age now where you look at your phone, you're looking down, you have bad posture, you know, cervical rotation. I mean, you talk about all that stuff. I mean, you got to do what's best for the athlete. And, you know, if you're not, then what are you really coaching for?
Yeah, for sure. I not even more than just like, I do the same thing. And you said being safe, like kind of like a 2-to-1 ratio in terms of the pull work versus the pushing work. And, it's pretty hard to go wrong in that sense. You're going to make sure that, you know, posturally things are where they need to be. And Kyle Rogers talks about it a lot too. I'm pretty middle of the road with a lot of stuff and I'm a big gray area guy. Like, I'm never going to probably, there's a couple things like, you know, don't get me down the road of the unstable surface BOSU ball stuff, but if we're talking about like bench and, you know, bench press with a bar or landmines or cleans versus whatever, like I'm very middle of the road. But the one thing I will say is that, and he made a great point, is, you know, if you are a person who likes to use the barbell bench, people get so bent out of shape about, oh, like, you know, it's scap restricted. We want to work on presses where the scaps can move freely. And it's like, you're doing that with so many accessories. So if you want to add the barbell bench in a little bit, it's not going to kill you, because the other stuff that you're doing, if you're programming correctly, will let the scaps move.
Hey, barbell bench is not bad. I'll give you a story. 2 years ago, Blaine Knight, I think he ended up being 14-0 playing in Natty. Mm-hmm. He loved the bench with no board or anything, straight bar. Every time after he threw, he loves it. And then we have another kids on the team, the straight bar hurts their shoulder.
Yeah.
All right, so they dumbbell hurts your shoulder, push-ups. If not, go landmine variations. There's so many ways to do it. You just don't have to get stuck on the big three, if that makes sense. But I do love the big three, so don't get me wrong with that.
Yeah, there you go. Like, it's again, a lot of middle road, which is a good place to be.
100%.
Okay, so kind of, again, moving into another topic of, like, you know, actually, hold on. There was something I'm looking through my notes. One thing I wanted to hit on. Yeah. So we kind of touched this on a little bit, not to be too redundant, but, you know, looking at things from more of the adaptation, results kind of based, mindset versus getting so caught up in the variations. In your opinion, like, you know, why do people get so caught up in the variation versus the ultimate goal is just like the results we're trying to get? And like you said, making sure the guys are where they need to be, you know, when it comes to performance or what we're just ultimately trying to achieve with the training.
Right. I mean, I think variations are good and everything, but if you're in a college setting, you don't have much time. And if you look at our program, it's very basic. All right. You know, Dan John talks about it a lot, you know, the push, pull, hinge, carry.
Yep.
Squat, the simple five, you know, and that's, I mean, if you looked at our program all the way up to when we played in Omaha, it's the same thing, but we're just different variations of intensities and loads throughout the year. You know, we'll variate, and people get caught up in so much of the adaptation of doing that different stuff. It's like, if you stay to the basics, you'll probably adapt, because the kids don't train long enough where, you know, you switch it up, it's going to really dramatic change, you know? So whatever you throw them, they're going to adapt. I mean, let's be real with it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think ultimately what a lot of people get caught up in is like, it's an ego thing and, you know, hey, my way is the right way, or your way is the right way, or your way is wrong. And I think the variations are a really easy way to, and I think, not to say like it makes it, you have to work less or think less, but let's face it, it is pretty easy to feel like when you have things solved, like, oh, this is the number one exercise to get this result. It's like, it takes a thought process out of it versus like, like you said before, like, you know, does the bench hurt your shoulders? We'll go to the dumbbell bench. That bothers you? Let's go to a push-up or a landmine. Like that, it requires a lot of thought. So I feel like sometimes people move away from that thought process because they're kind of maybe a little intimidated by what it requires.
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. Like, we're in the business, like I told you, of winning and development.
Yep.
Okay. And if you got to get out of your comfort zone as a coach, and if you're stuck on your main ways, I mean, the game is changing every day.
Yeah.
And if you're not reading or trying to research, you're going to fall behind real quick. Like, simply in months, you'll fall behind.
Yeah.
So look, if there is certain things that you can do to help, especially with the buy-in with the kids, if you have a different variation, the kid might love it and he might put more effort into
it. Yep.
Because intent drives everything, you know? So, you just got to be open-minded, and you got to be reminded of your support staff. You know, you're there to support those kids and those coaches win.
For sure. So kind of piggybacking off that a little bit, you had a tweet, and it basically was as simple as staggered RDLs greater than single leg RDLs. And I know in a vacuum that could seem very black and white, but that's why I want to open this up to you to kind of go through your thought process there. In your opinion, and I have my thoughts on it, but I want to hear that no one's here to listen to me right now. They want to listen to you. Why would you say that? And what would your thoughts be on the benefit of the staggered stance versus the single leg?
Well, over the years, just watching every kind of athlete from college to pro to high school, female or male, they struggle with the single leg deadlift. All right. They open up the hips. It's just a pain. So, you know, just like single leg squat and single leg RDL is limited by the athlete to maintain stability, you know. So I definitely like the stagger stance because of the training effect at higher velocities. You know, we like to hook up tendos to our RDLs. We'll go up 10 those, everything, man. So with the staggered RDL, we can kind of tell. I mean, we'll see, hey, you're a little bit quicker in the right leg than you are the left. All right. So we see that stuff. We write it down. We note that. We start programming stuff to help them with that. But the single leg, you can't really do it because nobody really does it right unless you spend your time right. And then they have stability issues.
Especially if they try to put the speed on it or you're trying to get any type of measurement right. It's going to mess it all up.
Exactly. You know, for instance, like if you're going to do isometrics with the unilateral position, I mean, the staggered L is definitely going to reinforce the hinge and brace the skill of the lifter, you know? So again, bang for your buck, man. Like NCAA, we only get 4 hours to work with these guys a week in the off season, your strength phase. All right. So you got to look and see what's best, if it's going to transfer to the field and help you win games.
Yeah, for sure. I actually, and I want to run this by you too, how I think of it. That's just a great point as well, like the control and the stability, and if guys are actually, or girls are really achieving the movement, you know, through the proper channels, or are they opening the hips? Or are they, you know, kind of sacrificing things to get, you know, and especially like you said, and if you're using like a tendo to measure the speed of it, like that could compromise a single leg versus the staggered, giving a little more of a base. I also like to think of it in terms of, you know, if you look at athletics and sports overall, how much more time people say single leg, single leg, single leg, but how much more time is actually spent where you're not in that traditional bilateral position, but you're not necessarily only on one leg, like your split stance, your staggered, whatever it is. I like to look at it in the sense that if you're actually going to talk about kind of making sure things have more of a transferability in terms of the planes of motion and the muscles and the movement of the sport, like it actually matches up a little better with the staggered versus that straight single leg.
100%. I mean, how many guys do you see at first base? They're in a staggered RDL for all the time. You throw over, they're in a staggered RDL on the right side. All right. It's a one-way lead on the lefty, staggered RDL on the left. All right. So the more strong and explosive we got that leg, I mean, I'm all in. I mean, we have our guys load up RDLs very heavy here. So just sitting down, the staggered, it's the hog way.
And again, listen, I literally posted a video on Friday with one of my indie ball guys doing a rack position single leg RDL. Like I use them, but like I want to put a disclaimer on this episode, like a giant stamp, like that you got to have that gray area mindset. Like there are 10 different situations right now that we could sit and say 9 things might be the right time at that point, but it depends. Like 6 might be, it shuffles back and forth. And like, that's what a good coach does. And if you're a listener that is, you know, either a young strength coach or someone that's, you know, interested in getting in the field, like that's one of the number one things that you have to understand is that you have to, you know, dig deeper and think deeper on these things and see when they're good or when they're not good and kind of have that like thought check, that process to kind of go through and check the boxes off.
That's what I'm saying. You can't, I mean, you can sit there. Like when I look at a team, I don't even look at position. I look at the player. All right. Obviously I know their position, but every player at that position is going to be different. All right. So there might be certain guys that need to work on certain things. That's middle infielder. All right. But there's certain guys that are pitchers that are, you know, relievers or starters need to work on different things, you know? So it's all about individualizing to the person. Yeah. You could say the position, but you already know the position. What does that kid need to work on to improve his position?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, just again, getting caught up in the whole variations that have to be done. Like, you're not going to be able to do that. Like you said, that thought process you just kind of outlined, like, that's impossible to have if you're so caught up in, like, it's got to be done this way. Like, yes, there are ways we approach things in training, but ultimately, what we do in the training area is to benefit the field. So, that thought process has to dictate everything. Like, what is going to achieve what we're trying to achieve for that particular player, that particular athlete in the field of play when they're actually performing their sport.
100%. That's the goal.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it's funny that a lot of these topics and things that I wanted to, you know, have in this episode, they all link together in that ultimate, you know, kind of fully encompassing thought process of, you know, understanding the demands for sport. And I think, as a coach, having kind of like that checklist in terms of like, what are the areas that the sport involves and what are the areas that the training involves? And hey, I have a beginner athlete. We're going to be a little more broad. And as I get up the ladder and they get a little more experience, maybe we check more of those boxes off, right?
100%, man. 100%. You know, that's how our guys are. Once they get their junior year and it's draft year, I mean, some of these guys are pretty well trained. I mean, we have two or three pitchers, like, this sounds crazy, all they do is dynamic velo work. Like, these kids squat 450, 500 pounds. I put them on tendos at 0.9, 1.0 the whole year. And you know what? Some of their velos have gone up. Like, one guy, he's been working 0.9 the whole fall. Now, this kid's still running. You know, he's front squatting 295 at, like, 0.9. Like, it's a joke.
That's insane.
Okay. But, yeah, so his velo goes up. And, you know, I look at it. You got to look at the kid, man. And you got to see if he's well-trained. You got to look at all the dynamics going into it.
So just to clarify, because we're talking about bar speed and then, obviously, baseball, so velocity throwing. You're saying he's been doing that 295 in that 0.9 range and his throwing velocity's been going up, you're saying?
Velocity went up. He's peaked up. So it's the fastest he's ever thrown. I think he threw 95.2 on the track, man.
Okay.
And see, in the past, what we've done is a max effort dynamic day. So we'd work on the tendo at 0.5. All right. Maybe that's later on the week. At the beginning of the week, we're doing dynamic stuff. And, you know, obviously, this is off-season strength phase. You know, once he gets in the fall ball and stuff, it changes according to his throwing program. But, man, I'm telling you, two or three guys, and it sounds nuts to all these VBT gurus, like, I put him on speed work the whole year, and his velo's gone up. But this is a kid that's well-trained. He squats, you know, I have to look at his numbers, like 485, 495. And, I mean, he's a stud. He's 190 pounds. That's a lot. You know, so
oh my God, yeah, that's a lot.
So he's a freak of nature. Like he jumps 40-inch vert. You know, he's like a 9'10" broad. I mean, it's a pretty dope thing to be around because he's so special. But
yeah, we all have those guys where you're like, you know, enamored every time they come and train. You're like, wow.
Oh yeah, man, he's like the guy you're putting up on Twitter. He's your guy. You know.
Yeah.
But no, he's awesome, and that's the thing. Like, we have guys that are working just base strength now. They need a foundation of strength. They can't do all that variation and cool stuff like that certain pitcher can because they're not ready. They haven't developed and gotten that foundation of strength to do that stuff. So, and I think a lot of programs are starting to go that way, which is good. You have to develop, and if you're not, you're falling behind.
Well, Zach actually talks about that in our episode a little bit. It's like very similar to what you're saying right now about how, you know, even at TCU and Arkansas, like it's high level programs, like there are guys that come in day one and like their training age is so low and what they've been taught is so low that they might be sitting in the corner doing goblet squats for 3 weeks to get their get positioning down. And he, you know, he talks about this in the Movement Over Max's book, but you know, you might have guys in the corner doing, you know, dynamic effort twice. Like it's gonna depend. And even on the same vein, like in the same vein, guys that are more advanced, like one might be doing a little more strength work if, you know, maybe you do his vertical jump testing and you see that's, you know, more of a need for him versus, like you said, the guy that's doing the 295 for you know, that speed strength window. Like, it's really cool and it's really important to realize that even at the high of Division I level that is going on, and it's good to see.
You got to, man. It is good to see. And all the guys in our league, they do a great job, man. I mean, as competitive as it is in any league, like, these guys are out there coaching or developing. It's always good to see. It doesn't matter what level you're at. Even if you're the big leagues, you're working with big leaguers, they have stuff they need to work on, okay? And that's your reason to be there, is to support them and help them move better, okay? You don't have to go in and squat 315 at 1.0 on a tendo. Maybe you functionally need to get better in the squat pattern. And we do that, like Zach said, with the goblet. You'd be surprised how many pro athletes do goblet squats with just a 50-pound kettlebell because they need to work on that stuff, man.
Yeah, for sure. I say annoying only in the sense that, like, I have to rein kids in sometimes. But when I'm in a private facility and I have, like, a 23-year-old indie ball guy doing, like, a French contrast pairing, and then the 14-year-old walks in that, like, looks at that kid as if he's, you know, and he should, for good reason. Like, he plays baseball and he wants to be like that someday, but it's like, why am I not doing that stuff? And I'm like, but you got to trust me. Like, you're not ready for that yet. You don't need it yet. Like, you could imagine, yeah, like with the big age difference that I see, like, it's even more to the point where, like, I could have my 4 o'clock doing one thing and my 6 o'clock is doing, like, something completely different.
Exactly. You know, that's funny because you'll see the younger guy that see on social media, I'm ready to do that. And it's like, you tell that 14-year-old, hey, you want to go out there and hit off the, you know, the iron mic at 110 miles an hour? And they're like, no. Well, you ain't ready for that. You ain't ready for this, buddy. So
yeah,
everything takes time. Patience is the biggest thing in this business. And it's tough because of the windows you have and the pressure and stuff like that. But sometimes you got to slow it down, man, because it's better in the long run than it will be in the short run.
Oh, for sure. And another Joe D special. I quote him a lot. I'm a Jersey guy.
He's a stud.
Not taking out a machine gun to kill a mosquito, right?
100%. There you go.
So I think that's and what we're about to what I wanted to get into next kind of picks off the same thought process. But you tweeted out it's just a simple motor unit involvement chart. So it basically and I could actually I'm gonna probably attach a picture of this in the show notes. Yeah. But this kind of gets into talking about the amount of motor units, that are recruited with certain variations. We talked about variations, obviously. So comparing things like, your traditional heavy squat versus your, overhead med ball throw or your trap bar jump or your regular jump or whatever. And the importance of prioritizing, motor unit recruitment in terms of team sports and, team sport athletes, when it comes to speed and developing overall explosiveness and power. So I kind of wanted to just open up that to you and see, what your thought process was. And again, there was really nothing to read. You just posted the chart, which is, the chart's important. It opens up a lot and it kind of shows you, and we're circling back to, I'm a big Verkhoshansky guy, the principle of dynamic correspondence and whether or not the activity, how transferable it is to the sport based on intensity and the speed of it and all that kind of stuff. So what were you going for when you posted that and what does it mean to you?
Well, I love that chart. So one, I think I saw that Derek Hansen's, but that's Charlie France's like motor unit chart. So he wrote that and I saw that in the book. That's an awesome, like every intern or whoever's trying to get in this business, like that's the one thing you should look at. Like at For least sure. look at that. You need to know about that, especially when you're trying to start programming. Obviously here's the deal. Like whatever sport you're training, okay, you need to be sprinting. So sprinting is the best thing you can do for the CNS. I mean, it fires it up. And I would almost put max effort sprints number one category. And that's just me. And I know Charlie Francis, and there's a lot smarter people out there. But even at a young age, when kids sprint, the more they sprint, it kind of cleans it all up.
Yeah.
So the more you sprint, you can actually clean a lot of stuff up. And I've seen that with our guys. I mean, we bound here. We do wicket drills. We do flying tens. Like, our thing is speed. We hang our hat on is a speed wins. And it's a fact. You look at any top tier programs and stuff, the ones that have really good speed, obviously good pitching helps a lot, but teams that have good speed always have an advantage. And that could probably be any sport, to be truthful with you. But again, if you looked at my program, I mean, we do a lot of explosive stuff every day. We're tracking verts, we're tracking broads. We're going to do it. We're trying to break med balls every day. And that's why I like the Olympic stuff. If you can do it, I mean, if you look at that chart, 80%, all right, that's the power clean. If I got a kid that comes in, he cleans 308 or 305, whatever kind of weights we got, I'm probably going to keep doing it, okay, because that kid's firing it up. Again, obviously, you're seeing that's going to be tagged from like 2 to 5 reps on those. I love that too. That's why we work triples here. That whole chart is just greatness. And that's why I tweeted. I didn't put any words with it. It doesn't need
them. It doesn't need them, yeah.
So, I mean, you kind of look at, like, whatever your sport you're training, even if it's a general population, look at the stuff they want to do, okay? Look what's going to transfer to the field, and that's the biggest thing you got to do. I mean, what do you want to be shown on the field that guys are getting stronger, faster, developing in the weight room. Obviously, from the selection of exercises, you probably can get it done if you choose the probably the red and up as your primary, so.
Yeah, I think like you said, showing someone who's interning or wants to get in the field. I think if you took that kind of picture, or that graph, or that explanation of, what type of exercises recruit the most motor units, and you kind of put that next to the Verkhoshansky transferability principles that I alluded to, and you put those next to each other, like you could come out of there with a pretty good idea of how you should program athletes.
100%, man. When you look at that, and I was thinking about that when you said that. The three things I would look at, especially when you're programming, obviously that chart's good. And I actually went over that with our intern program, internship program today. But number one, just look at movement similarities,
Yep.
What's their position? Are they jumping? Are they twisting? Which way? Throwing loads? This can go to any sport. This is just a primary thing I look at when we see a kid for the first day. Well, like, even take ground balls, hit baseballs.
Not to cut you off either, but just something to throw in that I thought of. You talked, a little bit about that Devin McConnell tweet about the linear power, like the linear jumps versus the lateral versus the vertical, the vertical jumps. You know, not to say that. Listen, we do a lot of vertical jumps, box jumps, like everything, right? But if you're working up that ladder, like I said before, with the more advanced guy, and you can start to kind of narrow things down, that principle of, correspondence, one of those boxes is the planes of motion. So which planes are you, or which directions are you more so implementing power or expected to display power in your sport, right? So you were about to get to it, and I just thought of it that I wanted to add in, is that's a great way, another good example.
100%, man. You know, we'll look at kinetic similarities such as vertical, horizon, force application, broad jump, vertical, all that's good stuff. I mean, we use a lot of technology here. We do ground contact times with a bunch of our guys. And, we're always trying to improve. And it was funny. I was out in Colorado and Al Miller's there, and he's looking at my program, and I wanted him to just tear it up. And he goes, "Hey, how do you know you're getting better at hurdle jumps?" And I think he told another coach that was up at this clinic as well. And I go, "Coach, I don't know. I really don't know." He goes, "Time them." And it's so simple. It made sense. What are we doing? We're timing our hurdle jumps, our four hurdle jumps that we do. It's just a regular, track and field hurdle. We'll time them. They get better every week because of the intent.
Think about that. You get so caught up in and I don't say caught up in a bad way. It's important to get caught up in. It's like if a hurdle jump, the ground contact, right? Like the limiting the amortization phase in, layman's terms, like how long you're on the ground. What better way to do that than to time the entire time it takes you to do the four? Like, it's impossible to have a lower ground contact time with a higher time on that hurdle. So that's just such an easy way. And I never even thought of that, to see if they're getting better.
Yes, we timed our game. It worked. Most of our applause in our program next week or two was to get back on the hurdles, but we'll time them again. I mean, that's a great way. If you care about it, you assess about it. All right. So we care about weight here. So we weigh in our guys weekly. That's because we care about it. We're going to assess it. Okay. If you don't care about bench press, don't test it.
Yep.
Just do it. If you don't care about the hurdle jumps, just do them. Don't time them. I mean, that's the kind of easy, simple stuff people overthink. It's just, hey, how do we know we're getting better in this?
Well, the testing is to validate your programming, correct? Like, that's
right, 100%. I mean, I've talked to coaches that do not do any testing. I don't know how that works. So, I don't know how the kids don't buy in.
That guides my program. Like, that literally tells me I need to change. Like, I just explained this to an athlete of mine right before I actually left the facility. Before, it was, we were doing vertical jump testing. It was like week six. He started with me 6 weeks ago. And I said, "Hey, like, we're going to retest your vert and, then retest your static vert." And he was like, "What does all this mean? Why do we do it?" And I'm like, "This guides what I do with you next."
100%, man.
100%. And he thought it was really cool when I actually explained it to him. He was like, you don't just kind of go at it and just figure it out. Like, no, dude, this is like planned out. Like, then I open the Excel form. You're showing them everything. And it's like, like you said, the testing is what's guiding what you're doing. And if you care about it, you have to test it to assess whether what you're doing is effective. Like, you weigh your guys, like, is their diet, is nutrition where it needs to be?
Right. Exactly. And you also see correlation. Guy loses a certain amount of body fat during the season, he's more prone to injury. There's certain ways to look at it. Whatever you want to do, it's just how you're going to do it. But if you're going to do it, you need to be consistent and be all in. Don't be week in, week out kind of thing, because the kids see right through that stuff. They're smart.
Oh, for sure. And they'll notice patterns. Like, and I like this. My guys, if you have anybody that's been with me for a year, they'll tell you exactly what the tests are that we do and why we do them. They'll learn it and they'll figure it out. But there's like a set – I have guys look at me and say, "Hey, why are the football guys, you train doing things differently than, me?" And I'm a hockey player, but like they notice, right. They notice that stuff. Like you said, they're smart.
100%, man.
And, they take a lot of stock in your ability to be able to answer the why behind things. And if there actually is a why behind what you're doing.
Oh yeah. Hey, so I'm going to go back to this motor unit chart. I got something I want to say.
Yeah, please.
So, all right. First of all, sports is all about the first set speed.
Yep.
I mean, let's be real. Okay. And Buddy Moore said it best than ever. And I have this written down actually in a couple of my notes. Sometimes I always read through my notes throughout the day and I'll see different quotes and stuff. So that's kind of where the Twitter quotes come from, by the way. Buddy Moore said it best, man. The difference between a good athlete and a great athlete is their ability to recruit motor units.
Yep.
All right. So you go back and look at this. Let's say we do explosive med ball throws. Hey, if he's got a higher velo, he's a candidate for a better athlete than you because he recruits more motor units. Now, I know it's very broad and everything.
Yeah, but see, yeah, it's an example. Yeah.
It gives you a general foundation of what you're working with, too. So if you're not assessing all that stuff or using the chart, I don't know. Good luck to you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, and it just like it speaks to, I actually. A tweet, it's one of my favorite tweets I've ever seen, to be honest. And that's not hyperbole. Like, it's one of the most, like, I've probably alluded to it like 15 times since, like, I've seen it, like, 2 weeks ago, last week, whatever it was. Joseph Potts had a tweet. Joseph Potts had a tweet that was said, I've seen athletes that are very fast sprinters not jump high, but I've never seen an athlete who jumps high be a slow sprinter.
100%. There you go.
And I looked at that and I was like, what? Like, how many times I've thought of that? I've told guys why it's important, why we do the vertical, but I've never like put it so simply as that. And it kind of is one of those things that like, it was like, it kind of knocked me on the head and I was like, holy cow. Like, it's just so simple, but it's so true. And it speaks to the point of like, why are we doing the tests that we're doing? First of all, you need to be testing. If you're listening to this, you don't test, like, don't be like ashamed of yourself or anything, but it's a good chance to like just kind of figure it out and have a set of tests that you can turn to. But that's just a perfect example. Like, you mentioned the ability to recruit motor units, like of guy who can, you know, possesses a high vertical jump. Odds are they're recruiting more motor units than you if yours is lower. And if I put the both of you on the line to go sprint, you know, mechanics aside, I would have put money on the fact that he's probably going to sprint faster.
You know, it's funny talking about that tweet. So I've implemented this year more isometric stuff for the ankle.
Okay.
All right. And it's Ken Clark stuff. It goes through like the joint angle of each acceleration. All right. So you have your regular bent knee and then it's very low to the ground or whatever. Man, we started this summer. We just got done fall ball. So we put them on a jump mat every day. I track CNS with a jump mat.
Yeah.
And it's worked out for us pretty well. So.
I wasn't planning on asking you this, but
I jump mat a lot. Pitchers a lot more in position, guys. But
if you're using the jump mat for the CNS and the readiness and everything, right? What are your explain how you use it.
So I use G Flight.
Gotcha. Okay.
Pitchers for CNS. Yep. So that vert's a little bit lower, but it gives us a base and it gives an RSI and ground contact time on that. So, now when the guys are in the weight room, we pull out jump mats for that.
Gotcha.
But we use the G Flight for the thing. So basically what we do is
Max is going to love these shameless plugs that I love throwing him on here, by the way.
Max is my guy. So he helped me through this whole process and I appreciate him a lot. If you're not following him or thought of him, he's super smart.
He's a show alum. He was episode 35. Go back and listen if you haven't and check him out at Strong by Science. What he puts out, but then also what he's doing with Exergo with this equipment we're talking about with the G Flight, the G Spray and everything is just fantastic. So definitely check him out if you haven't. But go ahead. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so what we'll do is we'll take three counter movement jumps so the pitchers before they throw, and then we give them the day after.
Okay.
All right, so we'll see correlations of how they respond. I mean, everybody responds different. You know, not everybody's going to be the same day after. You know, big Isaiah Campbell, the big 6'5", 250-pound Friday night guy we had last year was a lot different than, like, let's say Patrick Wicklander, our Sunday guy. He's a freshman, and he's like 6'1", probably 185, 190. He's going to respond different. So what we see in these verts is how fatigued they are, and depending on their numbers, we prescribe their program throughout the week. So we might cut out some volume. We might add some volume. It just depends on the kid and everything. So that's been a cool thing. But the isometric ankles have been huge. And I know some football programs around the country are using it and some baseball, but it's been a game changer. All of our guys have gone up in verts. Their starting tens have gone up. Their flying tens. I mean, it's been a huge game changer for us. So any of the Cal Deets ankle stuff too is really good as well.
Yeah, for sure. And it's actually, we're going to get on that a little bit about the hips and the ankles and kind of where that all goes.
Yeah.
And I have that coming on, down the line, but yeah, no, it's just, It's great. It's the vertical, like what it can do as a tool and what you can use it for. And whether it's the vertical itself, a counter movement jumps, like anything, like it could be used for so much in terms of, you know, assessing the, you know, effectiveness of the programming, the readiness to train, the impact of activity, whether it's sport or weight room on the athlete. Like it just, there's so much, it's such a versatile, you know, metric to use.
100%, man. Yeah. It's easy.
Yeah, for sure. So kind of, again, like it's funny, like a lot, and I actually didn't realize this when I first put this outline together. I didn't realize how much a lot of these tweets and topics kind of gel together, and they kind of cover a lot of the same things, but I think that's great. The tweet you had, and it was just, you said, keep it simple, and it was just another graph, another picture. And the picture says, no need to overcomplicate exercise. It underlines exercise. It says, want strength, add more load. Want range of motion, move further. Want power, speed plus load. Want variability, vary positions. Want endurance, go for longer. And then it said, want fun, gamify. So actually, it's funny. I didn't notice the what want fun, gamify part. I stopped reading after the endurance for some reason the first time around. So anyway, I think that's just great. It makes it simple to understand. But, you know, the importance of keeping it simple. And sometimes we can overthink programming, but, you know, how can we also make sure we're actually training for the, you know, adaptations we're seeking?
Yeah, I mean, one, you got to look at the sport you're training. All right. And I, you know, I tell coaches all the time, especially the guys that are coming into business or even sport coaches, the guys that don't have strength coaches, they have to run their own programs. You know, Dan John says it best in easier strength. And I love Dan John's stuff. Press, pull, hinge, squat, loaded carry. And I would add a lunge in there if you're doing baseball. The reverse lunge is my biggest bang for buck, to be truthful with you. So much can be cleaned up with that. But again, the adaptations you're going to see from those simple exercises, they have that their training age is low, it's going to be high. Again, you got to think these kids that come in. Now I'm all fortunate, you know, to train with you up in New Jersey all the time. They come in, they might not have any experience at all. So we have to teach them from the base up. And again, the kids are going to adapt. Let's be real. All right. So
quickly, too, because they're good athletes, obviously, if they're coming to you to play. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, for instance, one of our outfielders for West Coast came in, first meeting we had, said, hey, I haven't lifted weights very much. And I appreciate him telling me that. All right. So him telling me that, he's balled in. He's seeing he's getting stronger. He's seeing the ball off the bat harder. Kid front squat 225 the other day. And he, I mean, 4 or 5 weeks ago, he's doing goblet squats. You know, so the process comes really fast, especially with athletes I'm dealing with. They adapt quick, and it's a lot of fun. So, but wherever you are, you just got to take your time and just wait. But whatever you throw at them, especially being a college athlete, they're going to adapt if you do it the right way, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the biggest thing, too, is, you know, people so many times that I see, like when I see mistakes made or things like I don't agree with necessarily in the field would be the idea. And it can be so simple sometimes. And this chart really just shows you how simple it can be. But sometimes it's not done that way. But it's like, are you doing things? Are you using, you know, programming protocol that are trained, that is pushing you towards the adaptations that you're looking to get? And, you know, if you look at this chart, sometimes it could really be, you know, a good look in the mirror, like, you know, hey, my athletes, you know, they're, let's just say for argument's sake, you're training baseball players. I have a big baseball audience for that listens, and you're training baseball players, and, you know, the ability to, I'm trying to think of a good example here. Let's see. Let's say you're talking about base running, right? And the ability to get at, you know, off your lead at first and get to second, you know, in terms of, you know, being a successful base dealer or fast baseball, you know, baseball fast is different than regular speed, right? There's differences in, you know, right, how much time is spent in acceleration versus top speed or whatever. And you mentioned, you know, and this chart mentions like the endurance, go for longer, variability, vary positions, right? Let's look at speed, you know, top speed versus, you know, acceleration. Do I want to be faster at max velocity? Well, I should run more top speed. Do I want to be faster in acceleration? Well, I should do more short sprint work. What is more, you know, pertinent in your sport? And we said baseball is an example. you know, you're trying to steal for from go from first to second to steal a base, or you know, get after a ball in the outfield, you're not going to probably run more than 15, 20 yards. What's more important? Like, are you, if you're training baseball players and you're having them do a lot of top speed work, and I say top speed work, maybe not the flying 10, but I'm taking an example, like you're having your guys do 50 yard sprints. Like, well, maybe that's not the best thing to chase the adaptation you're looking for the baseball player.
Right. Yeah, you know, here's what's interesting. So 2 years ago, I didn't run our position guys over 30 yards the whole year. And we had a pretty good year. So next year, I actually learned a little bit, and actually top end speed helps with acceleration.
Yeah, oh, for sure, so for sure.
Right. So we mixed in a little bit of top end, man. But I think what people miss, you know, is there's conditioning and there's sprinting.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's hard as a coach, especially when guys are standing around. I always go with the thumb rule of 30 seconds for every 10 yards. That's your rest.
Yeah.
All right. So if we go 30 yards, a minute and a half, blah, blah, blah. All right. That's because we're working on speed. Now, if we're working on a conditioning thing, which we don't do any of that stuff, but that's a different, you know, aspect. Again, whatever you're trying to do, like, you know, for instance, if you went back to the weight room, you want to get good at pull-ups, do pull-ups, you know, that's back to keeping it as simple as possible. Like, over the years, my program almost looks more and more like an NFCA, you know, essentials book. You know, it's very, it's not that, but it's very simple, and it's basic movements, and we try to master those movements. That's the same thing with speed work. Like, if you need to work on your first two steps, that's probably what you need to train. You probably need to do stuff off that motor unit chart, you know, in the red zone, all right? Because that's going to give your explosiveness in your first 2 to 4 steps. All right, so I think it's, you know, it's every. It's which way you look at it. And I think people are overthinking that they, you know, I tell Max this all the time. Like, I feel like sometimes I'll be researching and get on this one topic and I'm running through a woods with a flame, you know, like a mad scientist. And he even had to tell me, hey, man, you need to take a step back. You're making it way too complicated, you know? So I think too many people do that where it's as simple as you thought the first time. You just overanalyze it.
Yeah, for sure. And just to clarify too, like, obviously, and I've had this conversation before, like, if you're faster in any area of a sprint, it's going to transfer over to other points. I'm more so speaking on like the mechanical differences.
Yeah.
And 100%. Like, yeah. So yes, definitely the top speed work does, sure. Does have an impact on acceleration, but like, you got to just take a look at like what is more needed in your sport and what's going to be. Yeah, and again, it goes back to like that Verkhoshansky, that those principles of transferability and the motor unit chart. Like, they all kind of mesh together and give you the answers on what you should be kind of prioritizing in your programming. And you mentioned 100%. Mentioned the conditioning versus speed. Like, that is something that's so misunderstood.
Yeah, that's a different podcast.
Yeah, I mean, you said it the best, kind of just to tie it up really quickly, but like, the rest is the key, and the rest will determine and the speed at which you're moving, whether you're, you know, what energy system you're working on, and if you're training, you know, max speed or conditioning. And to get faster, you got to run fast as fast as you can, right? You mentioned the timing before, like, that's the biggest key.
100%, man. Intent runs to everything.
Yep.
It's the drive.
Yep. Like, yeah, what is your intention behind what you're doing? Do you want to move fast? Do you want to move slow? Like, that is what dictates the adaptation that you're getting.
Exactly. Like, if you're a guy, like, I don't think there's many of these left, but coach comes to you and goes, hey, we need to improve our speed. Well, quit running 300 yard shuttles. Okay. That's one thing you can help out your program.
Yeah.
If they need to work on. So I have nothing against 300 shuttles. We run them sometimes. We actually do them sometimes carrying a partner. All right. Cause you know, we like to do stuff out of the ordinary sometimes. So
yeah. Like you said, it depends on what you're trying to get.
Exactly. So yeah, whatever, you got to look at what your main focus is, and whatever that is, you need to hammer it out. And again, like I said, like NCAA, we used to have 6 hours. It used to be 8 back in the day. Now it cut to 6 and now it's 4. So, you know, sport coaches get 4, strength gets 4. And you know, I don't know this for sure, but I think basketball might be 8 and 2 now or something like that. So I don't really know. You don't have much time. You know, the college setting, it's a lot different than any other setting. So you need to do what's best for the athlete for that time being.
Yeah, for sure. I could, there's no other way to put it. Like, what gets you the result you're getting in the most efficient way possible. And that's, as Matt, you know, kind of, we mentioned Max before, strong by science, but that's optimal, is what's efficient, what's effective, what's efficient, combine them. That's optimal.
Yeah. 100%, man.
He's so smart. He says things sometimes like, well, I didn't wish I thought of that.
Right. I know. You might have, you just didn't say it.
No, like I might have thought it in like 18 sentences, but I couldn't think of how to put it in the one sentence.
Same way, man.
Hey, it all gets there, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Somebody got the message.
Yeah, for sure. So finishing up, and this was one I thought was interesting. You know, you mentioned your tweet was knees hurt when hips aren't stable and ankles don't move. Just a heads up. So a couple different things about this. One, how everything links in the chain and everything, you know, from top. Like I remember some of my physical therapy mentors that I had, you know, obviously as a strength coach, it was really, you know, key for me to be able to kind of get in their environment and kind of see how they did things from a moving perspective. And I remember one time, and this is actually a shout out. His name's Brady. Brady is a guy that treated my injury since I was like 12 years old. And he kind of had a, you know, big impact on me getting in the industry. And I used to hang out with him and watch how he treated his patients and everything. And I remember one time someone came to him, I want to say it was something like their knee or their hip was bothering them. And he literally narrowed it down to their big toe.
Oh yeah.
And at the time, it was like, I was like, what in, I couldn't believe it. Like it blew my mind. And I mean, still does to this day, but obviously not as much because I understand how it all works. But I just couldn't understand how the toe, when, you know, obviously there's like, you know, compensation and are you moving differently because of, you know, how that's affecting you. And, you know, I thought of that when I saw this tweet from you. So just expanding on this, like, you know, talking joint by joint model and, you know, what needs to be stable versus what needs to be mobile. Like, you know, what's your take on that and how that kind of all plays, you know, a role and how it all goes together?
Yeah. So I actually took an FMS course when I was with the Cardinals, but I know about Greg Cook's, you know, joint primary knee stuff in the past. But I tell you, man, over the years, when I actually look at that, like, it makes a lot of sense to me. So, like, ankle needs mobility, right? So that would lead up to knees needs stability, and then your hip needs mobility. And then lumbar spine needs stability, thoracic mobility, scapular stability, and then glenohumeral, the shoulder joint needs mobility. Now, the only interesting thing I would say about this whole thing is the hip and shoulder are an exception because they both can be immobile and unstable.
Yep.
I think that's the only one you look and especially with the hip, man. I mean, we do so much with the hip. I track internal rotation like every 6 weeks with these guys because of just how the sport is, and we don't want to lose that. Internal rotation, because if we do, I've seen pitchers with little scars on their elbows that have less than 20 degrees in internal rotation of their hips. So that's just a little heads up there for you. But
just dropping that in subtly.
Yeah, just take that one. So, you know, what I do like about this is too many people, and I actually will credit Zach on this. I heard Zach speak down at TCU about it. He's a good buddy of mine. He's great. You know, too many people look at what's causing the flu and not actually or what actually is the flu and not what's causing the flu.
Yeah,
sorry, I messed that up. So if your back hurts, you know, it's probably from a hip mobility problem that could come from a stability issue in the knee that would probably lead to your ankles being terrible in dorsiflexion, you know. So, you know, it's a crazy conspiracy kind of thing, but it actually works, man. Like when guys have hurt backs, or not, I want to say hurt backs, but tight backs, erectors are tight, they'll come like, hey coach, a little tight in the back today. We'll go through the squat pattern and see what the deal is. There's something leading to that back.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And the same thing with all the movements. You know, instead of shutting them down, put them on the foam roll on the turf with the trainer, let's put them through the pattern and see what's going on.
And that was honestly, it's interesting you said that. That's one of the first things that drew me to this physical therapy, this place that I'm affiliated with and I send all my athletes to, and I've learned so much from them, is their ability to take more of that movement-based approach to what was bothering somebody or why it was bothering them versus, like you said, jump on the foam roller and get stretched out or whatever. Like,
yeah,
there's so much that goes into it.
There's so much, man. And there's so much out there. I mean, like, you know, with the Chinese medicine, let's talk about RPR a little bit. This is kind of off the grid a little bit. But, hey, guy has anterior shoulder pain. I would see if you would ask that guy if he had an ankle sprain or a knee sprain that's opposite side of that shoulder. And sometimes it leads back. Like we've seen some guys have anterior shoulder pain. We'll put them on a knee for pressing just so they fire that glute. They're back in a week. You'd have to shut them down for 6 weeks. So movement is the best medicine, you know, to an extent. If it's a long-term, you know, injury, then there's nothing to do there. So,
yeah, for sure. And it's just, it's great how again, like if you have that kind of those pillars to your thought process, it makes things a lot easier. And it works the same for whether it's like knowing what joints need more, you know, whether they're more stable or mobile, or knowing, you know, the intensity of which the sport you're training for requires. Like if you have that base of knowledge with you, it kind of just makes it a lot easier to open those doors and like to know which one to go through when it comes to, you know, breaking this stuff down and assessing what you need.
100%. I mean, that whole process is very simple. And I tell like our staff and everything, like if you lose ankle mobility, you probably get knee pain. Okay. If you lose hip mobility, you probably get low back pain. Let's say you lose T-spine mobility. And sometimes that is from hips. You get neck, shoulder pain, even low back. All right. So instead of looking at the flu, what's causing the flu? You know, I think that's the best approach you can do with any athlete. Instead of shutting them down for 4 weeks, they lose everything they gained those last couple weeks, and you got to start fresh with them. When actually, we probably could have put them through the movement, and they're back next day because we figured out what was causing the flu.
Yeah, for sure. It's just like it's kind of, you know, I'm trying, like, you don't throw a Band-Aid over something. Like, figure out what's actually, you know, the root cause of it. And I mean, yeah, are there times where things are a little more superficial? Like, sure, there are times when a guy says, oh, my back hurts, and it's because they, you know, smashed down on their facet joints. Like, it's easy. But there are other times where, like, there are back issues that are the hips. Like how many times you see someone with a, especially in baseball, because, you know, being a, you know, asymmetrical rotational sport, how many times a guy, you know, has that lower left back pain and their pelvis is offline, or, you know, something shifted? Like, it really, you got to dig through it and see what could be, or the adductors, or, you know, not firing, or the glutes, whatever it is. Like, there's different things, like you said, what's causing the flu.
Exactly. And you can nip a lot of stuff if you just assess your guys every once in a while. Like, we track T-spine, hip internal rotation, shoulder flexion, external, internal, all that stuff with our guys constantly to see if we need to adjust and do stuff in the program to help them. If, I mean, if you go a whole season and don't track the internal rotation, and then by the time they go to the Cape or it's the draft and it's gone down like 5 or 6 degrees, I mean, what are you going to do? You know, so they're already going somewhere else, and your name's not on them, but you've been working with them, and now it's a bad look. So, you know, you got to treat these players like, you know, they're your prize, like they're your family, they're your sons. Okay, you want to treat them with respect and love, and you want to help them develop and make a lot of money.
Yeah, for sure. It's the level of care and the level of attention to detail. And yes, like, I like to preface a lot of things. Like, there are coaches that are listening that, like, do they have the means to test every single thing or whatever? No, yeah, but it's just, are you doing the best you can? And are you finding the things you know? And, you know, is everybody going to be out there with a, you know, goniometer to be able to, you know, measure the degree or anything? No, like, but you can have your guys squat every few weeks and just assess their pattern and see, like, in that's a, again, like a good example of a more general way to do things. If, like, you don't have the ability to, you know, get super specific with, you know, the degrees of the hip rotation or whatever it is, like, you can do it on a more movement basis and just kind of be attentive to all that.
100%, man. I'm telling you, you can actually clean up a lot. We've seen a lot of guys that have trouble bounding or doing like sprint work. Once their reverse lunge gets cleaned up, it cleans everything up. It cleans their squat up. It cleans their step ups up. It cleans their bounding. The reverse lunge has been, it's been a moneymaker for sure. And I suggest other people that train overhead sports or anything that you just mix it in once, twice a week. I promise it'll clean some things up for you.
Yeah, no, it's definitely key. Like again, that's something like I might not have focused on as much a few years ago. And you just learn how important it is from just watching your at, like, I'm trying to think of the best way to say it. It's like, not even something that you learn outside of what you're doing with them. You see it because of what you're doing with them. You say, oh, this like probably could help them a lot just by, you know, me seeing what the effect it has by implementing it. Like, you can kind of see the positive effect that it has.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I think that's a kind of a great way to wrap up, but I always like to kind of give, you know, my guests the ability to, you know, kind of take the floor and, you know, put a bow on, so to speak, of what they just talked about. If they had any less thoughts for the listeners or, you know, anything like that. And, you know, I hate to put you on the spot, but, you know, if there's anything you wanted to kind of, you know, finish up with or leave the listener with, please, you know, now's the time.
No, I just want to say one thing. There's 1,000 ways to skin a cat.
Yep.
Okay. But I truly believe there's only a certain couple ways that work it right. All right. So, there is a lot of ways to do it out there, and whatever fits your kids, you need to do. Okay. Don't worry about what you, you know, you got to open your mind. And if the kids buy in and they give intent and they love the process, then stick with it. Don't throw in something that they're not going to buy in or have questions about. And that's going to screw your whole program up. So whatever you do, just be consistent and win some games.
For sure, man. Hey, listen, I really want to thank you for coming on. And I'm happy we were able to, for those of you who don't know, we had a couple weeks go by where we were going back and forth with schedules, but such is life, you know, in the industry and, you know, how things change and everything. So I just want to thank you for taking the time, and I'm happy we were able to make it work and, you know, excited to, you know, get feedback on this. I think everyone's going to love it. So thank you.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Muscles and Management Podcast brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jared DeFilippo, signing off on the show that's changing the way we view training, sports performance, and business.